are listening to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything.
At Radiotopia, we now have a select group of amazing supporters that help us make all our shows possible. If you would like to have your company or product sponsor this podcast, then get in touch. Drop a line to sponsor@radiotopia.fm. Thanks.
We're supposed to learn from our own mistakes, but other people's errors can be instructive too. From efforts to control the weather that went disastrously awry, to the untimely death of the Segway boss, history is a treasure trove of mishaps and meltdowns that can teach us all. I'm Tim Harford, host of Cautionary Tales, the podcast that mines the greatest fiascos of the past for their most valuable lessons. Listen to Cautionary Tales wherever you get your podcasts.
This installment is called Analog Time.
On Friday, February 21st, 1997, I saw David Lynch's Lost Highway at the Nickelodeon in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Exiting the movie theater, I left one world and entered another. Well, it wasn't until recently that I came to understand exactly what had transpired. That night, it was all I could do to keep myself from panicking. I remember wandering around Harvard Square, crashing into people and careening into walls. I was convinced that I was having a breakdown, a psychotic breakdown, one not unlike the breakdown Fred Madison, the main character in Lost Highway, has after he murders his wife. I remember my walk home. It was the strangest experience because I had a destination, my basement hovel in Brookline, but as I marched through the swirling sleet and snow, I also knew that I was totally and completely lost. A couple of weeks ago, I rewatched Lost Highway. 18 years has transpired. And like I said, I think I understand now what happened. There's a very strange scene in Lost Highway. If you know the film, you probably already know the one I'm going to talk about. It takes place at a party. In fact, this is the very music playing in the background. Fred Madison, our protagonist, has just showed up to this party with his wife. He leaves her and goes to the bar and orders two drinks. He downs them both. Then he notices a mysterious-looking man across the room. In fact, this guy is listed in the credits as Mystery Man. Then, the music fades out, and the Mystery Man approaches.
We've met before, haven't we?
I don't think so. Where was it you think we met?
At your house, don't you remember?
No, I don't. Are you sure?
Of course. As a matter of fact, I'm there right now.
What do you mean, you're where right now?
At your house.
That's fucking crazy, man.
This is where the Mystery Man pulls out a Motorola Microtac DPC 550 Elite cellular telephone and hands it to Fred.
Call me. Dial your number. Go ahead.
I told you I was here.
How'd you do that?
Ask me.
How'd you get inside my house?
You invited me. It is not my custom to go where I am not wanted.
Who are you?
Give me back my phone.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
And then the mystery man turns and walks away, and the music comes back up. Now, as creepy as this scene is, I assure you, it was even creepier in 1997. Because in 1997, almost all of the people who watched this scene did not own a cell phone. In fact, they weren't even called cell phones then. In 1997, they were cellular telephones. This is what the author David Foster Wallace called them in the September 1996 piece he wrote about his visit to the set of Lost Highway for Premiere Magazine. I certainly didn't own one. In 1997, I didn't even own a landline. This was a very special time for me. I didn't have a telephone. I didn't have a computer. I spent most of my days at the library and my nights drawing and reading and listening to records. I came of age in the 80s and the 90s, so I am of a generation that straddles two modes of being. And as much as I love the convenience of Google Maps and the ease in which I can put my voice into your headphones, lately I've found myself nostalgic for that time before. I didn't get a cell phone until January of 2002, but I realize now that it was that night, February 21st, 1997, when I made the transition. It's that laugh that the mystery man makes, that demonic laugh that comes out of both his mouth and the cellular telephone. It communicates all of the horror of what is to come and what has been lost. That laugh is my own personal digital divide. A couple of weeks ago, I participated in a live Radiotopia show in Los Angeles. It took place at the theater next to the Ace Hotel. Perhaps you were there. Well, unlike some of my smarter fellow Radiotopians, I performed a piece that only works in a live setting. In other words, even though I have a giant gaping hole in this episode, I can't use the piece I spent weeks on because it just doesn't work without a video screen. I started off my live performance with a bit about the visionary artist Yanal Talpasan, who one night, after a terrible beating from his foster mother, climbed out of his bedroom window and wandered out into the Romanian countryside. There, he encountered an otherworldly craft. It filled the night sky and bathed him in a blue light and energy. He spent the rest of his life trying to make sense of that encounter through his art. Yanal Talpasan made hundreds of UFO-themed paintings, drawings, and sculptures. Like I said, I performed this piece in front of a giant video screen. So at this point in the story, I showed the audience a number of these amazing images. If you're unfamiliar with his work, you should look him up. It's Yanal Talpasan. I've been told that the correct pronunciation is Yanal, but I've also heard a lot of folks call him Ionel. Perhaps this is why, just before he died, he changed his name to Adrian da Vinci. Janold Talbezin was an outsider artist. He made a few inroads into the New York art scene, but he was more comfortable selling his paintings on the street. I would often see him outside of the outsider art fairs. Janold Talbezin passed away in 2015. Sadly, I never got to ask him what he made of our now overcrowded skies. When I say that line, the one about the overcrowded skies, a drone comes onto the video screen. This is why the piece doesn't really work without visuals. I never say the word drone. The audience only sees them. About 4.5 minutes of drone footage I culled from YouTube. Drones that spy and surveil, drones that ferry cruise missiles and burritos. I even showed the famous clip of the drone that fires live rounds from a pistol. You see, for Janold Talbezin, the UFO was a promise of inner healing and universal peace. For Janold Talbezin, the UFO was a spiritual technology. Sometimes, even visionary artists are wrong about the future. For me, this transition from UFO to drone is another way to talk about the transition from analog to digital. It's another way to talk about the transition from looking up to looking down, from looking out to looking in. It is, and I use this line in the piece, a transition from sci-fi to selfie. You know, it really moves me to see so many people getting excited or nostalgic now for decommissioned media formats. But the move towards tape cassettes has kind of thrown me for a loss. Record labels and musicians are tripping over themselves now to jump on this bandwagon. But my friend Alex Lambert explained to me one morning over breakfast that the real story is the American prison system. Because they never stopped listening to cassettes. I asked Alex to do a piece on this for my show. And then my friend Roman Mars told me that we should do it for his show, 99% Invisible. He just ran a version of this story. This one is a little more wistful and a lot more sad.
These machines are basically 1970s and 80s machines, so they're old enough to have personalities.
That's Steve Stepp, owner of National Audio Company in Springfield, Missouri, America's preeminent manufacturer of cassette tapes.
They're magnificent machines. They were built to run forever, and they have run and run and run, and we have restored them all to their original condition.
As Steve walks the floor, his machines are running off the new Eminem tapes. But music wasn't always the mainstay of his business. This is why, when the music industry turned to the CD, National Audio was able to stay open.
We didn't lose any business because we didn't have any business back in those days of recording music.
For decades, Steve focused on the spoken word market.
Instructional material, religious organizations, textbooks.
He even made tapes for experimental sound artists.
If you can record it, we have recorded it and put it on tape for people. We did a tape once. It was the sound of grass growing.
Steve believes the reason the music industry has returned to the cassette format is because of a desire for the analog sound.
The world is analog. Your ears are analog. There's something about your ears that say, you know, this is an actual recording of an actual musical performance. I think that's really one of the reasons why analog music appeals now to the under 35 age group.
A love of analog sound may be what brought about the retro revolution and this mania for vinyl and tapes. But there is one community that never stopped listening to cassettes. The United States prison system is the largest prison population in the world, and cassette tapes provide most of these prisoners with their only means of listening to music.
that's the only way I think I've made it so far, because I have a good imagination, and I just close my eyes, put my earbuds in, and I just be gone.
At age 14, Adolfo Davis was involved in a gang-related shooting. He was tried as an adult and sentenced to life. Now 38 years old, he is serving his sentence at Stateville Correctional Center in Illinois. Listening to cassettes is one of his only means of escape.
Yeah, every night I put my earbuds in and just go to sleep. I go through so many batteries, it's crazy.
In 1990, the year Adolfo was incarcerated, everybody was listening to music on cassette tapes. In fact, Adolfo had some with him when he went to prison.
Yeah, I got locked up with a Walkman and I think like 7 tapes. Yeah, when I used to sell drugs, I have a fanny pack. And I have my Walkman and my fanny pack with my tape. And I be listening to the Walkman while I'm watching out for security, for the police.
A fanny pack.
Yeah. We used to call it a pouch, but it's a fanny pack.
let's be real.
It has to be clear.
Not just any old cassette tape is allowed in prison.
It has to be sonically welded so it can't be taken apart and put back together. And the box it goes in has to also be perfectly clear.
At National Audio, Steve Stepp makes a lot of these specially modified tapes.
Obviously, the tape will never be clear. It's going to be a little brown or black roll of tape in there, but that's pretty obvious what you're looking at.
Prison inspectors need to be able to see through to the spools.
The reason you can't have a 5-screw cassette or maybe a colored cassette that's opaque is they don't want a razor blade or narcotics or something else to be enclosed in a cassette. And that's the reason for the limitations that are placed on the medium that is allowed in the prison.
Some of these specially modified cassette tapes will be ordered by small labels, some by individuals. Most are likely to find their way into the United States prison system. But it's not so easy for an inmate to receive one. Someone has to send it to them.
We had to grapple with having our family look on the internet or doing the research ourselves, trying to figure out how to get music in here. So we got to go through a whole process, like send them the money, and they'll order the tape for you on a CD, then dub it on a cassette tape, and then send the cassette tape to us. Some industry sell tapes, but they will sell you, I swear to you, they will sell you a tape for $70.
At Statesville, prisoners used to be able to buy Walkmans at the commissary, but that's no longer possible, making the Walkman one of the most cared for and coveted items.
I play my Walkman like 3 days, then I let it rest like 2 days, because if it breaks, it like, I start crying. Could you hold on for a minute? Police asking me something.
Attrition is not the only threat.
When it's like a major shakedown and they bring other officers from other institutions, they would just break your TV, break your radio, take your TV, take your radio, take your cassette tape. And once the guards take those stuff, it's hard to get it back. And once you destroy my Walkman, I cannot get another Walkman.
I asked Adolfo what was on his list of the most important things to hang on to in prison.
My number one thing to keep around here is my Walkman, my tapes, my legal papers, and some bottled water. Yeah, they can have everything else.
It's probably one of the most prized items for theft. People try to, try to hold on to them as much as they can, keep an eye on them and, protect them as much as possible.
Efren Paradis Jr. was a 15-year-old honor student when he was tried as an adult and sentenced to life without parole. He maintains his innocence as he serves his sentence at the Muskegon Correctional Facility in Michigan. In Michigan, inmates are allowed to own MP3 players, but it's not better. It's not even the same.
In Michigan, there's a policy that they try to restrict as much music that would be labeled as parental advisory.
In other words, the state of Michigan will try a 15-year-old as an adult and sentence him to life without parole, but when he becomes an actual adult, will not allow him to purchase MP3 songs that have a parental advisory on them. This is why Efren and so many others prefer cassettes.
Well, I have a pretty large rap music collection. I also have some rock and roll. I have some R&B, soul music, some jazz, but it's predominantly rap. You know, some of my favorites would probably be Kendrick Lamar. I like Young Jeezy, Rick Ross. I like Lil Wayne. All girls are the same, but mine are different though. And as far as terrific goes, I gets kissed
with no mistletoes, eyes and pretty toes. Even if there were no restrictions on lyrics, replacing a cassette collection like Efren's would be impossible. MP3 songs have to be purchased through a company called Access Corrections, and they cost $1.50 per song. A prison job, if you're lucky enough to have one, pays around $20 to $30 a month.
We still have a lot of cassette tapes that are floating around for, you know, over two decades, close to three decades. I've listened to a lot of cassette tapes while I've been here.
While theft and damage are real concerns that demand vigilance, prisoners do also share music. Sharing music with each other is a way to connect with and support each other. The tapes and Walkmans are a means to an end. Both Adolfo and Efren understand this well, the importance of the kind gesture in such an unrelentingly bleak place.
Some people don't have money, some people don't have family, but we'll like make sure that the brother, if he got needs some tapes, listen to him. We got it. We'll like trade tapes, listen to each other's tapes. We're there for each other as best as we can be there for each other. In the days I rest my Walkman, I borrow a Walkman for somebody else to listen to their Walkman. Man, I can't do it without my music.
The wing that I lock on, you know, the unit is set up into two different wings. There's an upstairs and a downstairs on both wings. And the wing that I lock on is the upper wing, and underneath us is the solitary confinement wing. And, you know, we hear guys all the time yelling up to us saying, hey, turn the music on, turn some music on, you know, turn Rick Ross on, or turn on Meek Mill, or, you know, something so that they can hear down there something that's, you know, music. That comfort, you know, of listening to music is one of the things that they'll ask for, you know, as a request. It doesn't cost them a penny to ask for, and it doesn't, you know, cost the other person a penny to share it with them.
You have been listening to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. This installment is called Analog Time.
This episode was produced by myself, Benjamin Walker. And I worked with filmmaker Alex Lambert on the cassette tape segment. A slightly different version of that piece ran on 99% Invisible, thanks to Roman Mars and Katie Mingle for all of their help. And special thanks to Elise Blennerhassett, who not only introduced us to both Efren and Adolfo, but she's also continuing to work with them on a longer-term audio diary project that follows their daily life experiences and inner worlds, from their fight for innocence to their interactions, dreams, textures, smells, and memories. Visit her site, comfortofconstellations.space, for more information.
Hi, I'm Lindsey Graham, the host of Wondery's American History Tellers. In our latest series, we explore the emergence of a covert network of secret routes and safe houses known as the Underground Railroad, which worked to shepherd fugitive slaves to freedom in the decades before the Civil War. Listen to American History Tellers on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Radiotopia. From PNAS.